Hey, what's
Blog
up, folks?
Talk Radio.
Hey, so coming to you live and direct just before Divisional Championship Weekend or Conference Championship Weekend in the NFL. We had a fantastic weekend of football. As you guys, most of you guys know by, you know the results of the games, but we had fantastic football. Atlanta was upset by the Philadelphia Eagles. The Titans were destroyed by the New England Patriots. Jacksonville Jaguars went to Pittsburgh in the cold, points on offense, got another touchdown from their defense. But they showed their formidable opponent all the way through the season that a lot of people, including the Pittsburgh Steelers, overlooked. And then we had another fantastic finish with the New Orleans Saints traveling to Minnesota Vikings, and the Vikings were able to keep their hopes of playing on their turf in the Super Bowl 3 weeks from now. Mr. Cleveland, what was the most exciting game that you saw this weekend? Out of the four games, out of three games, just excluding the New England Patriots and Tennessee Titans, as we pretty much predicted that game correctly. But what was the most exciting game this past weekend?
Well, the most exciting game from a dramatic perspective has got to be the Minnesota Vikings New Orleans Saints game. No one saw it unfolding the way that it did. The last second heroics, the sports book heartbreak for my brethren in Las Vegas. I don't know what I would have done if I was in that same position. Without question, that was the most exciting game. The Steelers-Jaguars game had a lot more offense, so it was a lot more back and forth, and just kind of the way that whole thing transpired was still very entertaining. But the most exciting game, just from, the fantastic finish, would have to be the New Orleans Saints Minnesota Vikings game.
Well, since you bring that up, no argument you're going to get from me in that sense. But since you bring that up, I see that definitely as how piss poor tackling has permeated the NFL. Was that a case of Minnesota winning that game or a case of New Orleans Saints losing that game? How would you see that final play?
It was absolutely a case of New Orleans losing that game. I've heard a lot of different perspectives, and the conclusion that I come to is that there was a lot of pressure put on the safety, Williams, to kind of make that play. But if you really look at the play, he was put in a situation wherein he was made to be the scapegoat. There was supposed to be, safety help to the back of him. There was supposed to be more linebackers in formation. And given
his position is the safety. Most everybody knows that's the last line of defense. It has been since the time you suit up and play Pop Warner football. What do you mean he was put in a tough situation?
He had no safety help behind him. He was not the free.
But
he was strong.
He is the safety.
He didn't have help. He didn't have help to the sideline, and the formation that they were in allowed for Stephon Diggs to make a big play on the sideline, turn it upfield with no help behind him. I don't believe that is a formation that they really intended to have on the field when that play transpired.
Help me out. What position did the kid play? Was the kid a linebacker? Was he a cornerback? What position was he?
I believe the young man was safety.
The safety means he is the safety. The other safety was on the other side of the field. That was his position. I know you've been gone a week. In fact, let's back up. How was your gala event? I know you've been gone a week, so apparently you kind of not in the right frame of mind. You saw the game, obviously, but maybe you kind of lost touch being in there, hobnobbing with the big shots, rubbing elbows with the at the Black Tie Affair. You kind of lost focus on what this actual football is. So let's tell the people how the gala event was.
Well, thanks so much for asking, Cam. The gala went great. It was a gala that was honoring and giving a word to a mentor of mine, Tony Shulman, in the fashion world, a 206 native, for his contributions to the KC adoption program and their agency, giving a lot of time and money over the years. So it was a well-deserved award, and everything went spectacular, and glad the event went off without a hitch. Now, that being said, back to my analysis, how the New Orleans Saints, instead of Vikings game ended, I am just saying, obviously, it was poor tackling. Obviously, for fans in New Orleans, I would think that losing a game in that manner has to hurt as much, if not worse, as the Seahawks Super Bowl loss to the Patriots a few years back, just given the down and distance and the set of circumstances, the insurmountable odds that would have had to been overcome to even win that game. So, hats off to the Vikings. They took advantage of an opportunity, but I'm just saying, don't put it all on the Williams kid. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, you say unfair. I say well-placed blame, because it's not only him. It's the generation of football players that we see today, either trying to make a big hit, not wrapping up, go completely whiff on the tackle. And shout out to Stephon Diggs. Really did me dirty in all season long in fantasy. I picked him, but I just couldn't count on him for most of the season. But that was a heck of a play to make the catch. Great field awareness to turn up the field, keep his balance, turn up the field, recognize there was no other defender in the area, because not only did the safety, Marcus Williams, not make the tackle, he actually blocked his other player from possibly making a play. Not that he was going to make the play anyway, because he was a few yards behind him as did turn up the field, but he knocked him down and blocked him from having an attempt to make that play. And that was good effort by Stephon Diggs, because admittedly so, I'm sitting there screaming, get out of bounds, so they can kick the field goal and take the lead. But that was great field awareness by him to turn up field and get into the end zone. And, I applauded the helmet toss by him and the quarterback. Certainly applauded Minnesota Vikings, as I'm looking forward to them getting to the Super Bowl and playing on their home turf in the Super Bowl. That somehow they're going to be the visiting team, but yet and still, I'm looking for them to move on this week. And that was a heck of a comeback, although that loss does have to sting pretty badly for the New Orleans Saints. And but all in all, that was a fantastic win. Al Cole, fantastic comeback. If you remember those, any cliche you want to use, that was a great win. Will come from behind as the lead switched four times in the last 3 minutes of the game. It was very exciting, and good job by the Minnesota Vikings to get that W. The Eagles holding on when the Falcons had first and goal inside the 10 with four plays to go, under a minute to go, and there was some bad play calling in that situation. Did Matt Ryan choke? Did Julio Jones choke? Did the offensive coordinator choke? Who you put the blame of the loss for the Atlanta Falcons on? Or was that just a great win by the Philadelphia Eagles?
Well, I think if you have to, place blame on any one individual, it would have to be, it typically should be the quarterback if there's plays to be made that they don't make. So, at that point, I'm going to have to go with Matty Ice. I didn't see Julio Jones having extraordinary opportunities where he just, you know, drop balls or didn't put himself in position to make a play. Sarkisian is always going to be compared to Shanahan, which is unfortunate for him. So if they don't look like the, you know, the second coming of the greatest show on turf when they're out there, then there's always going to be speculation that it's the play calling. So, I mean, that's fair and valid. I mean, when you follow a, you know, a predecessor that, you know, has had that kind of success, then, you know, that's par for the course. But, you know, I would have to put it on Matty Ice myself personally.
So you're cool with the shovel pass on second down, second and goal at the 5-yard line. You're good with the shovel pass.
That's one of the things they do. That's one of the wrinkles in their offense. They just have to execute it a little bit better.
Well, I'll let you're ducking my question. Apparently, you're ducking my question. Once again, you're perfectly fine with. Are you perfectly fine with a shovel pass, a second and goal inside for the game winner, under a minute to go, under 60 seconds to go? You're perfectly fine with the conference championship on the line with a shovel pass from your quarterback.
It's not necessarily the way I would have designed it. However, I don't think that was the difference in the game. I think that there were some other games, most notably last Sunday, that the play calling was a little bit more questionable and probably did actually cost them the game. I don't think that this necessarily cost them the game. I think it was just poor execution on their part.
We're talking about the game in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Eagles hosting the Atlanta Falcons with the defending NFC champions with a chance to score a touchdown and go ahead and win the game. Well, at the gala, was there dancing going on? Did you learn some new dance moves or something? I mean, you're dancing away from my question, and the answer really deserves a kind of yes or no. Were you good with the shovel pass on second down?
Okay, well, if it's a yes or no question and you put it in that context, then, yeah, I'm good with it. I'm okay with it.
Oh, my goodness. So you think Darren Bevel should have kept his job? You think Darren Bevel, you probably don't have a problem with him losing his job over the past week then. Should I assume that as well?
You shouldn't assume that. I was actually quite happy to hear that Mr. Bevel lost his job. I am not nearly as enthusiastic about who they're bringing in as a replacement, who has had a very, you know, mixed bag of reviews through the league to this point. He's got a great name, namesake. It carries a little bit of weight, but, yeah, not too happy with that. But as far as the play goes, is that the play that Waddle lost them the game, in your opinion, Cam? Is that what it all boils down to, the show fast on second down?
It didn't lose them the game. Obviously, they had two more plays after that failed attempt at the shovel pass. It was just another ridiculous call by a team out of Georgia with the conference championship on the line. It was just a ridiculous call. As you state, the quarterback must take culpability for it. But you have an all-pro receiver who, if I'm not mistaken, is like 6'3", 220 pounds. Why not get him the ball? Why not run the slant pattern like you just ran the play before to get it inside the 2-yard line? That was a play after. That play maybe should have came before the shovel pass. The shovel pass was ridiculous. The defensive line has been applying pressure most of the evening or most of the game up the middle of the field. So why are you running the shovel pass when the defense has proven all day long that they can clog the middle and clog that opportunity? That was a terrible play. And no, it did not cost them the game, to address your question specifically, but it was a piss poor play, and it made it more difficult, obviously, because now it puts them on third down where they have to pass, they can't run the ball to get that play accomplished. And you say no blame goes to Julio Jones. I can't entirely blame Julio Jones. My blame would go to the offensive coordinator for that piss poor play that obviously would cost him a down anyway. But Julio Jones, I think. I'm not going to give him any, but when you fall down twice and you let the defender push you down, essentially, and then you miss the pass, which goes right through your hands, that could have won the game. I'm not sure. I don't know what else Matty Ryan could have did if, again, another bad play call was having your quarterback roll out to the right to the short side of the field to throw the receiver because they didn't have to defend the other side of the field. So, again, I would give most of the blame on that particular scenario to the play calling that on two of the plays I just described to you was absolutely terrible and kind of caught those plays cost them the season. I would surmise to that. Would you or subscribe to that? Would you agree, sir?
Well, I guess given your analysis, then my Seattle Seahawks caught a break because their first option for offensive coordinator after firing Daryl Bevel was Steve Sarkisian. And Mr. Clint said unequivocally 0% chance that he leaves and goes up there. So I guess given the way that he schemed out the last couple of plays of the game, that Seattle Seahawks are fortunate to have dodged that bullet.
Yeah, they are very fortunate to have dodged that bullet. They are very fortunate. And unfortunately, I didn't hear who they're bringing in. Who are they bringing in as the offensive coordinator?
Oh, you didn't understand what I was alluding to earlier. I was a little cryptic about it. It's Brian Schottenheimer. So
well,
I'm not super duper enthusiastic about that move. I kind of understand it's somewhat of a lateral move in the sense that they both run very vanilla offenses and don't like to get too outside of themselves and are really rather predictable. With what it is that they're going to call. They're only as good as the personnel that they have. So, no, I'm not super enthusiastic about it. Tom Cable being replaced by Mike Solari, I guess that would be okay. But, you know, how will we know until we know how cohesive they are with the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach. So, yeah, it's not like they went and got, Don Coryell or, some offensive mastermind by any stretch of the imagination.
What a blast from the past. I'm not sure getting rid of Tom Cable was a good decision, though. He's been widely recognized as one of the best offensive line coaches in the NFL. I'm not sure getting rid of that guy when you don't have – you don't give him anything to coach up was a great decision. We'll talk about some of the coaching carousel later, but I'm not sure. Just want to throw that in. I'm not sure that was a good decision. Looking back at the other game, so did I get a – again, my man, he's been gone a week, and he's been working on his dance moves. Did I get a question – Did my question get answered? Would you put the blame on the offensive coordinator? Or no, you said Matty Ice. You'll blame Matty Ice. You're blaming the quarterback cause in that situation because that's what most people do. I think that was your statement. So let's move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. Were you surprised that Jacksonville was able to put up 38 points on offense? Were you surprised that Pittsburgh was able to put up 42 points on against that defense?
I was not surprised that the Steelers were able to put up the 42 against that defense. I was completely surprised that the Jacksonville Jaguars, who had one offensive touchdown the week before, were able to come in there and just run the ball at will and really make their offense look much more prolific than it's ever really looked this entire season on the road in a playoff game wherein the ramifications were so extreme and so intense. They were still letting Blake Bortles, kind of sneak out and get that little, 12, 13-yard run here and there. That was kind of weird. It didn't look like the Pittsburgh Steelers were ready for the physicality of the Jaguars on either side of the ball. They had better skill position players is what was able to allow them to stay in the game as long as they did. It was piss poor play calling on their end, and ultimately it cost them. They should be embarrassed. There's absolutely no reason if you consider yourself a Super Bowl team to let a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars up to Three Rivers or PNC, whatever it's called now, and come out with a victory. It's absolutely unacceptable in every sense of the word.
Wait, did you just call them Two Rivers now? Okay.
I didn't know if it was still three. I know it's not still Three Rivers, but I think it's what is it now? PNC or whatever the name of that stadium is. You know, I'm a little school in that respect, but Heinz Field.
Yes.
To come to Heinz Field and come out with a victory is inexcusable.
Okay. Yeah, it is Heinz Field. And funny thing about it, if you stand up on the hill, I was out in Pittsburgh, had an opportunity to be in Pittsburgh last year. You stand up overlooking the stadium, I see Two Rivers. I'm questioning every native how it's Three Rivers, but I see Two Rivers that flow into one, and I don't know how they ever got Three Rivers, but that's a story for another day. And I want to say something. I didn't pick Leonard Fournette in not one of my fantasy teams. I wasn't quite sure how he was going to perform this season going into it. But I did have some kind of inkling that he was actually an authentic running back, and I was very eager to see how he did perform from the time he got signed by the Jacksonville Jaguars, who they had T.J. Yeldon, was more of a scat back, a bigger scat back also than I anticipated. But I know his running style was conducive to Tom Coughlin, his coaching, conducive to what it really takes to winning NFL football games. So I asked a couple ESPN reporters who traveled the nation to go to various football camps during the preseason and asked them, have they been to Jacksonville? Have they checked out Leonard Fournette? And I was almost laughed off the sideline because everybody looked at me, Jacksonville, why would we go down there? We only go into teams who can compete for a championship. That's how we spend our time. And I was just, like, taken back by, I know, I think I have a pretty good grasp of the game. And I'm not going on a limb, or I'm not saying that I expected Jacksonville to be 10-6 and now I'm playing for the AFC Championship. However, I did expect some production out of Leonard Fournette, and I was wondering how his presence would change that team. So I'm going to have to reach out to a couple of those ESPN reporters who, again, damn near laughing off the sidelines there at the Chargers camp earlier this season. Has Leonard Fournette surprised you in what he's meant to the Jacksonville Jaguars?
He definitely has. I think that the maturation of the Jacksonville Jaguars, if anything, makes me feel a little bit sorry for Gus Bradley. I see a lot of the 206. I see a lot of the Seahawks and the way that they kind of get things done, dominant defense, establish the run, give him a little play option, you know, here and there, and kind of just ride with that. It's unfortunate he wasn't able to see the whole, you know, grand scheme of things, some of his drafts kind of come to fruition, added Calais Campbell and a few other free agents, and look where you are. But with regards to Leonard Fournette as a whole, he is kind of what I thought he was, which is when he's healthy, he definitely has the opportunity to be electrifying and do a great many things and, you know, kind of give an opportunity to kind of, you know, certainly against lesser defenses, although he absolutely dominated Pittsburgh in every, you know, sense of the word throughout the season and the playoffs. He's definitely been able to do his thing. I've always questioned, though, how much can you depend on it? I guess I would, you know, this is probably a little bit of a stretch, but my analogy would be kind of to Anthony Davis in the NBA. I mean, at times, you can go 45-15 in back-to-back games, haven't been done in 35 years, but at the same time, do you ever think he's going to play a full season? The answer is probably not. Is Leonard Fournette ever going to be out there for 16 games? My answer to that question would be probably not. So you got to have a very serviceable backup if he's going to be your workhorse. And when you get him, you know, kind of going right, and top 10. I'll give him top 5. That's kind of high. I'll give him top, just because they are where they are, I'll leave him there. I give him top 5 in the league, but, I mean, I just don't ever have confidence in him playing a full season. So I think you have to temper your expectation with that. But when he's healthy and doing his thing, he's one of the best.
He's going to be very productive because he can carry the ball. Like, as you mentioned, when he's healthy, he can carry the ball 25 times. So I was thoroughly stunned, shocked, and amazed that they put up 21 unanswered points to start that game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It speaks to the Pittsburgh Steelers, as we know, they were talking about meeting the Patriots in the following week. The coach had said weeks before that it's going to come down to them and the Patriots. The players were thinking about some of the players have written off Jacksonville. Some of the Jacksonville players went so far as to say as they felt like this was a bye game because everybody but their family members and everybody in Jacksonville had essentially written off the Jacksonville Jaguars, as did I. And they just showed their mettle. They showed their stick-to-itiveness. They proved their worth. They earned their money last weekend. And as a football fan, I hope they bring that same enthusiasm, that hard-nosed, tough defense that they play, their running game. And Blake Bortles actually shows up here on Sunday. Because if they do, they can really make it tough for the defending Super Bowl champions. However, if Pittsburgh was able, if Big Ben's able to throw for 469 yards on them, what is Tom Brady going to do? I have to revert to that. And so this is why we saw that when the Patriots put up 35 unanswered points against the Titans, after the Titans came out and drove right down the field on them and took the lead to 7-0, we saw Bill Belichick look over across the sideline and say, that was pretty cute. Now here's 35 for your down your throat right quick. To the Tennessee Titans, and they had absolutely zero response. I don't think it'll be 35 unanswered points against Jacksonville Jaguars. It might be 21 to close them out. What do you think about the Jacksonville Jaguars and we'll get to their chances last week, but do you have any confidence, I guess I'll ask you, in Jacksonville being able to pull this game out?
Unfortunately, I don't. I think they're just a little bit too green, and I don't like what I see from the receivers on offense. The Robinsons and the Lees of the world just don't really scare me that much. T.J. Weldon, like you said, he's a nice step back, and in certain defensive schemes, he can kind of get his yards, and that team on offense kind of will go as far as Leonard Fournette can carry him. If he's healthy, if he's able to find some holes, that's great. You establish time of possession, you establish the ability to kind of control the clock and give the Patriots less possessions. I definitely think that their defense is capable of keeping Tom Brady uncomfortable for long periods of time, and we all know how Tom doesn't really like to be uncomfortable. So if he has to move around a lot and isn't able to just kind of fight, he's a rhythm timing guy, so if he's not really able to find those spots where he wants, when he wants, he's a different player. At the same time, going to New England, nobody ever goes there and wins. It's got to be eight AFC championships. They have the resume and obviously they kind of show what it is that they've been able to do. I think that Jacksonville is in way over their head. If they had a little bit more of a dynamic playmaker on the offensive side of the ball, maybe my guy Jadon Dinkins, UW grad, will create that spark on special teams, as we've seen special teams can make or break in the playoffs. So maybe a few, advantageous punt returns kind of gets those guys better field positioning so the game doesn't get so out of control so early. Because if the game gets out of control early, then it's just going to be, mop up time. It's just going to be kind of, unwatchable. But if they're able to kind of stay with them and let the Patriots know that they're in a game for three and a half quarters, then we'll see what happens. But, again, the odds are against them. and given what they're able to do on the offensive side of the ball, I'm not overly optimistic with their chances for victory.
Okay, I tend to agree with you there. But just to recap the week, last week, we both had the Falcons, which we were wrong in that pick. We both had the Patriots, which obviously we were correct in that pick. We both had Pittsburgh, and then I had Minnesota moving on. So the week kind of went how the rest of the season should have gone. Me winning the picks in the week, me winning the points against the spread, actually 1-0 there. So that was a 3-1 win, and then in the confidence picks. So for the total playoffs, it's 50%, which is kind of sad, but 4 out of 8 I have correct. You have 3 out of 8. And then picks against the spread here in the playoffs, it's 6-2. Cameron winning again. Again, this is probably how things always transpire for the rest.
That's crazy. Cameron.
No reason to be surprised, but I'm not hardly surprised. And then the confidence picks, obviously, 7-5. Cameron wins again, so trifecta there for week two of the playoffs.
Oh, wow, by 1 point. Good for you. Good win.
Actually 2 points. Again, I had Minnesota winning, and you had New England.
But had one of those games out one other way. I got you. Good win.
Good win. Correct. Thank you. I'll take that. We talked about it. I thought it was a bad, great win for the Jaguars. Bad loss for the Steelers. As you mentioned, some of the play calling in that game was pretty preposterous. I thought it was a good win for the Vikings over the Saints for the reasons we talked about earlier. And I guess it was a bad loss for the Falcons. I say the Falcons lost that game more than the Eagles won that game, but nonetheless, the Eagles are playing at home for the division championship or the conference championship. Let me correct that. So the coaching carousel that's been going around, there's a few spots open. The Cardinals, Colts, Giants, and Lions, as we speak, they are. There are some players or some coaches already pegged for win, but the coaches are here playing in the playoffs. What's your thoughts on the current coaching scenario and the coaching carousel?
Well, I find it interesting that the Titans job came open recently.
Oh, that's right.
Kind of given their ability to go to Kansas City and win against a team that was supposed to beat them. And I'm not saying that they gave a lot of fight in New England, but they were severely outmatched in experience and just in you know skill set. So I thought that was kind of a surprise with regards to the jobs being opening. I would have to say that suddenly becomes the most attractive because you have a team that's already been to the second round of the playoffs, and no one beats you up too much for losing the New England Patriots because pretty much everybody loses the New England Patriots in the playoffs. So, that can't be that big of a knock against you. So that all of a sudden becomes, to me, the most attractive job of the still vacant positions. I found it very interesting that Mike Tomlin up there in Pittsburgh came under a lot of fire and a lot of rumors that some of the minority owners up there want to get rid of that guy. And I would have to say that ordinarily I would say that it's just preposterous. What are you thinking? You need that type of stability in your coaching staff, and it gives your team a certain amount of credibility every year and kind of a mindset of what it is they want to accomplish. But to be quite honest, given that assembly of talent they have underachieved, and so I definitely feel that the seat getting hotter Tomlin is definitely warranted. Having experienced it firsthand here in the 206, from the perspective that you're looking, do you think that the window is just wide open, and it's so wide open, it isn't going to be closed for several years? But that's just not how the game of football works. The windows close very quickly. They closed for weird, odd reasons that you never would have expected. I mean, you see they lost their linebacker this year. Weird, flukish things can happen. Martavis Bryant will probably leave free agency. So you're not bringing back the same team. It's not like basketball or baseball where everybody's, kind of in their prime. And, the the fall off is gradual. Football players age in dog years, and the fall off is from good to gone. So I think it's good that they're putting that kind of pressure on Mike Tomlin. He reciprocated with firing Todd Haley, who I thought was a complete total dunce for not running QB sneaks on fourth and less than a yard on two separate occasions. One of them was a pitch 3 yards in the backfield to Le'Veon Bell. I was like, where do they think this guy is going? It was a ridiculous call. That's the strength. That's the strength of the number one defense in the league, and that's the play you run. Very strange.
Yeah.
The second time they did it, it was a throw down the field. I kind of liked their, unorthodox style on that for a minute until Juju Smith-Schuster didn't catch the ball, and they all said, okay, well, that's your second and fourth in less than a yard in the opponent's territory, where probably your 6'5", 250-pound quarterback could have just fell forward for the 6 feet. So, that kind of decision-making, the onside kick, you try and be all egalitarian, and our team is better, and, we'll execute the play that I call and that kind of thing, but just kick the ball. Give yourself as much of an opportunity, especially with that type of offense that you have. You can always come back. 80 yards is not as significant as it is for other teams, for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have the weapons to do it, so give yourself the best chance to win. I just feel like those mistakes were glaring errors, and losing to a team like Jacksonville, that's very talented and upstart, but there's no way they should come in to Heinz Field and take a victory from a team that took the New England Patriots to a play for victory.
Well, we all know what that happened is. We all know what happened is that they clearly overlooked the Jacksonville Jaguars for whatever reason. As Jalen Ramsey put so eloquently, I don't know what they thought, because we blew them out earlier this year. I don't know why they were thinking that they're going to walk all over us, and I like that confidence. However, we know that team overlooked the Jacksonville Jaguars. Chance they got down by 21, and then some dumb play calls that kind of impacted their opportunity to win a game. So I agree with you. But I don't think Tomlin should actually be on the hot seat for that. But getting rid, making some changes, kind of looking in the mirror, maybe next year just kind of stay a single game focus, as the team from the Northeast typically does, that continues to win. But you're right, the Tennessee Titans seem like a good opportunity. I'd venture there's a quarterback who did not play this season who's coming back to the NFL, as we should expect that comes back to the NFL. And he should assist a coach to look much better than probably he actually is in getting 10 or 11 wins next year when he returns to the field. And I think you know who I'm talking about. And it's not by luck.
I have no idea who you're talking about. I have no idea.
It is not by luck, pardon the pun, that he's going to assist a new coach in winning multiple games when he returns to play.
I admire your loyalty, my friend. Yeah, it's great.
What's that?
I admire your loyalty. That's great. It's better than just admitting that you made a mistake.
Well, the guy was hurt. What do you mean made a mistake? The guy is hurt. He's still one of the best young quarterbacks in the league.
He was hurting this whole season the year before they didn't make the playoffs.
That's like saying Kawhi Leonard isn't one of the top 10 players in the league. As soon as you want to use a basketball reference earlier, that's like saying because he's hurt, he's not one of the top 10 players in the league. That's what you're essentially saying by wanting to address and not admit that Andrew Luck is one of the best young quarterbacks in the league. That's like saying Kawhi Leonard is one of the best young players in the league, right?
I guess for my opinion, for my money, if the question was who would you rather have right now, Deshaun Watson or Andrew Luck, I would probably say Deshaun Watson.
Well, I don't know how Deshaun Watson gets in this conversation. You just want to bring up people that you'd rather take than Andrew Luck? Is that how you want to morph and manipulate?
I'm just saying I don't have the same level of confidence that you've always had in Andrew Luck. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just saying some other quarterbacks have come out here this season and balled. That's all that I'm saying. I mean, Andrew, when he's on the, you know, if it was four, in 2014, you know, I'd be like, yeah, that's the, you know, that guy has a future.
So Jared Goff led his team
coming off the entire season with that.
Jared Goff led his team to the playoffs. Are you going to take Jared Goff over Andrew Luck? Exactly.
I think Jared Goff might be a bit of a stretch. Yeah,
I'm just saying. I understand your logic in saying that the Colts is an attractive job given who may come back from shoulder surgery and be productive next year. But I'm just saying that as a team as a whole, and that's not even remotely as close as a good a job as the Titans. Way too many Colts.
Well, they have a lot more issues than the Titans. I will grant you that. They have an aging running back. They have one wide receiver of note. The defense has been rather poor of late.
Non-existent, right? Yes.
I agree that the Titans is a better coaching opportunity, but quarterback is not. I mean, there's no comparison in quarterbacks there, and I hope you admit that. Even the quarterback taking off a season, still no comparison to quarterback. But the Lions look pretty. The Lions look like a good job. The Giants remains a good opportunity just because we know that there's going to be an investment in the team there, the investment from the owners. And then the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals remain a good opportunity. I haven't heard anybody being pegged for that job. But coming up this week, we got two big football games, conference championship weekend. We talked a little bit about the Jaguars and what we expect out of the New England Patriots. I don't expect the Jaguars to put up 21 unanswered points on the New England Patriots, nor do I expect them to get a big lead where the Patriots aren't able to. I expect to probably go the other way around where the Patriots force Blake Bortles to become, Troy Aikman or Roger Staubach and bring the team back, and we know that's not going to happen. The other game, I think, is going to be a lot more contentious. I do expect, though, the Vikings to go to Philadelphia and at least put up 17 to 21 points. How they have most of the season, and Philadelphia, I think, can muster up the 10 to 15 points that they just did last week against the Falcons, and therefore cost them a game. And I expect the Minnesota Vikings to move on to be the first team to play on their home field, on their home turf, and ever in the NFL. Is that how you see the game playing out this week?
Well, the more that we talk about it, Cam, actually, no, I haven't talked myself out of it. I think that's actually how it's going to go. However, let's just, the caveat being, that if the Jacksonville Jaguars were able to hit those guys in the mouth early, see a little bit of blood, you know, see Clark Kent in the diner, you know what I'm saying? Not see him flying around the air. If you catch Clark Kent in the diner and he's slipping, and you punch him in his face and he bleeds, might have that little bit more confidence. That's what I see in the Jacksonville Jaguars, that if they kind of get that kind of front-running thing going, that they're a hard team to just get off you, you know, because they're not going to stop coming. However, if they're in a situation where Tom Brady is just Gronk and then Cooks and then Lewis and then Gostkowski for three and then Gronk and then Cooks and then Lewis and then touchdown, and all of a sudden it's like, 17-3 going to halftime. Yeah, they got no shot. If they get a special teams touchdown or, an interception or a fumble recovery and they're in it, they just have their hands full.
I would agree with that. I do not see the going down by 21 points, so there's the end of that story. Thanks for tuning in this week. We look for an exciting weekend of championship football. Cleveland, we'll talk to you next week, big guy. Thank you.
All right, take it easy, bro.
All right, later, boss.